Hello, I'm Don Deschamps. This is number 0289, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0289. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Matt Holman, who is the creator of the apps Invisible Boyfriend and Invisible Girlfriend. How did the idea come up?
About 8 or 9 years ago, I was recently divorced and found myself being asked by lots of folks when I was dating, was I going to be seeing anyone? Can they set me up with somebody? Even mom and dad asking if they should set that extra plate at the table for a holiday dinner. And I started to talk to other friends and realized that this is a real significant pressure. It was something that I had been married for almost 14 years before that and didn't really realize how oftentimes someone who's single, who quote unquote should be married in the eyes of others, gets asked those kinds of questions.
Lorraine Bozet-Smith is the author of I Want My Life Back, and she talks about studying human behavior.
I have learned through the years to identify someone's style and then be able to adapt how I communicate with them, how I approach them, and really the magic of this is any of us can do this by just looking for simple things like pace of speech, whether it's fast or slow, some of the clothing that they're wearing, is it bright, is it subdued? And these are all clues to someone's personality.
Dr. Frieda Birnbaum on the downside of binge watching TV.
They say more than 2 to 6 episodes is binge watching. You have to be able to set a pace for yourself, to know that you have to use your energy, and unless you're sick and you have to be bedridden or you can't get up, that's something else. But you know, the body processes energy throughout the day, and if you don't use it, that energy, that assertiveness is pushed inside you, and that creates depression, as well as watching too much creates obesity and illnesses.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0289 was Don Deschamps, who is a listener, guitar player, and as he described himself, frustrated broadcaster. He used to do the guitar corner on both CJAD and CJSB in Ottawa back in the day with the late Mike Williams. Thank you very much, Don, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 20-year-old Asian Anunike Clay took her daughter to Chuck E. Cheese in St. Charles, Missouri to celebrate the girl's first birthday. And it was a special day for another reason, too. "Say your last goodbye to your daddy," a witness said she told the girl, "because he's going to die today." Clay had already called her boyfriend, police say, to tell him to bring his gun to the pizza parlor because she was having a custody dispute with the child's father. The boyfriend did allegedly arrive with a pistol, but the father was not hit in the resulting shooting. Instead, he managed to shoot Clay's father several times, but he's expected to survive. No one else was injured. 22-year-old Arion D'Amico Ford, the alleged shooter, was found after a manhunt, and Clay is being held on a charge of attempted first-degree assault. The child's father's name has been withheld from the public. Chuck E. Cheese, where a kid can be a kid. You know, there are some people out there who probably believe that getting shot is the second worst thing that can happen to you at a Chuck E. Cheese. Anyway, thankfully, not all terrorists are the brightest bulbs. We have a couple of examples of that in spades here. 2 of them, to be exact. Well, that's a couple, isn't it? I said a couple? Yeah, okay. Anyway, number one, a recent YouTube compilation of footage gleaned from, in some cases, unedited ISIS promotional videos claimed to show jihadists accidentally killing themselves. Several fighters in a group photo appear to be blown up when one of them fumblingly detonates a captured bomb. And one man was killed when he apparently tried to reload a mortar launcher too quickly. Yeah, there you go. And item number two in Dumb Terrorists. A London's Daily Telegraph reported in January that the dark shadow jihadists from Tunisia and Ivory Coast, who had proclaimed their website hacking would disrupt international travel, wound up taking down a site consisting merely of bus timetables in Bristol, England. Dark Shadow's English translator also misspelled Muslim. Yeah, got nothing to add to that except that these are misguided morons at all levels of life and thinking. Let's just move on. The Albany Park Neighbors Group in Chicago, Illinois, presents its monthly Block Star Business Award to businesses that do their part to keep the neighborhood clean and presentable. This effort helps our group of residents recognize and champion local businesses who are going above and beyond in the fight against litter, the group's website says, while also providing great customer service and going the extra mile for our community. Some residents complained, though, when it announced the Admiral Theater as its latest recipient, primarily because of the entertainment provided by the theater. Cabaret style, with, you know, poles. Yeah. Really? One critic said. This business has to go. It simply attracts the wrong crowd into the neighborhood. The group's leaders, however, pointed out that the businesses are nominated and voted on by the neighborhood's residents. Most responses to the award were positive, with even critics having to acknowledge that the Admiral's exterior was cleaner than nearby stores. Well, it's because the employees only wear the bare necessities, I guess. But you know, it kind of reminds me of that old saying about overly tidy working spaces. I'm sure you remember it. It was, "Show me a clean work area and I'll show you a dirty mind." I never knew there was truth to that saying. Until now. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 58-year-old Marguerite Dawn Harrigan went to an acquaintance house in Boise, Idaho, and allegedly started making a ruckus. What did she want? The defendant was banging on the front window, yelling at the homeowner that she had better believe in Jesus and she was not going to leave until she did believe in Jesus, says Ada County Prosecutor Dave Rothcheck. When the homeowner came out to see what her friend wanted, Harrigan slapped her, grabbed her hair, and pulled her to the ground, Rothcheck said. The defendant began kicking the victim in the stomach and thigh area. During this time, the defendant was screaming at the victim that she better accept Jesus or she would not let up. After Harrigan allegedly started stomping on the victim's neck, the victim, identified only as a Jewish woman with the initials AG, promised that she would convert, and Harrigan left. When Harrigan returned 2 days later, only then did AG call police. Harrigan has been charged with 2 counts of malicious harassment, a felony that's classified as a hate crime. Okay, who here dares to tell Harrigan that Jesus was Jewish? Any takers? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Yeah, someone should explain the full Bible to her, you know, not just the parts that she gleans over. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Single but wish you weren't? Well, there's an app for that. Invisible Boyfriend and Invisible Girlfriend are apps designed to send you texts, calls, and even leave voicemails to help you convince everyone around you that you found love. On the line with us right now is Matt Homan, the creator of the app, and he joins us on the line via Skype-to-Skype communications from St. Louis. Hi, Matt.
How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, we were trying to get in contact with you earlier, but you were very, very busy because that was before Valentine's Day. So I got to ask off the bat, how was Valentine's Day for you?
I think Valentine's Day was fantastic. It was a great time for us to launch. We launched on January 20th, so we got a fair amount of attention just around the Valentine's Day, but it continues to happen, so it's all been good.
How did the idea of Invisible Boyfriend come up in the first place?
You know, about 8 or 9 years ago, I was recently divorced and found myself being asked by lots of folks when I was dating, was I going to be seeing anyone, Can they set me up with somebody? Even mom and dad asking if they should set that extra plate at the table for a holiday dinner. And I started to talk to other friends and realize that this is a real significant pressure. It was something that I had been married for almost 14 years before that and didn't really realize how oftentimes someone who's single, who quote unquote should be married in the eyes of others, gets asked those kinds of questions. And so I bought these domains, invisiblegirlfriend.com and invisibleboyfriend.com, and quite frankly didn't do anything with them for about 8 years. I was always had other work that I was working on, always other business ideas I was pursuing. And it was only when I went to a startup weekend competition in St. Louis in November of 2013 that I pitched the idea. I was going to pitch a completely different idea, and only at the last minute did I think about these domains that I'd been sitting on for a long time. Pitched the idea to a room full of strangers. We built a team and won the competition. And after that, it's been completely crazy.
So how exactly does it work?
So if you sign up for an invisible girlfriend or an invisible boyfriend, there's lots of things you get to do. You get to choose their picture, give them a name, identify kind of their personality, and even create the relationship story of how you met. And then once you've got your invisible girlfriend or boyfriend and you pay, and it's $24.99 a month, you get 100 text messages back and forth that are sent and received by real people. You get handwritten notes and voicemails.
Wow. This sounds like one step just short of the movie Her.
We've gotten that a lot. It's kind of funny. I've had people ask if we were trying to copy the movie Her. And really, I'd like to think that we were ahead of the curve here. We were doing this or thinking about this before the movie came out. For me, one of the things that has been more one of the more interesting insights that we've gotten after launching last month is that people are using the text messages far more than they would need just to prove they're in a relationship. And so I think we've managed to build kind of this in-between. It's not Her. It's not something as real as that Scarlett Johansson character was on his cell phone. But there is this kind of in-between relationship that I think that we're managing to tap into a bit, where there's someone to talk to using text messages, which is how many of us communicate now, and they're always validating and they're always there. So we're seeing some of our users who are using lots and lots of text messages, not just to say, hey, look, I've got someone else in my life, but to perhaps even have conversations or to share secrets. It's been a really fascinating insight into how people are using the service, and it's gone beyond what we expected.
Well, what is the biggest surprise for you in how the service is being used?
I think the biggest surprise for us is a bit of what I identified. I think there are people who are spending time really having conversations with their invisible boyfriends or girlfriends. And so what has been surprising to me, I think, most is that we always said that we were not in the business of trying to trick you that you're in a relationship, and we still don't want to do that. We're not trying to build you a girlfriend. We're just trying to give you better proof of this relationship. But the fact that people seem to be satisfied and, in fact, really embracing this idea of kind of an in-between companion or a distributed companionship is a term that we're starting to use, that they know how it works. They're kind of in on the way that this is happening. They know it's not a real person or the same real person over and over again, yet they're still satisfying some, whether it's emotional need or just a conversational need, that we didn't think they'd use it that way. So that's been the most surprising thing for me.
So you have to have a staff, I'm assuming, of people on your end who are answering these text messages. Who are they and what kind of qualifications are required, if any, to do that part of the job?
So we are only available in the U.S. and Canada now. So of our invisible boyfriends and girlfriends, they're all located here in the U.S., although as we expand internationally, we'll be able to localize that a bit more for different languages, traditions, et cetera. We'd even like to have some folks up in Canada to get some of the diction and certainly some of the language differences, even though they're somewhat subtle between here and there. Right. But the people are what I'd call a widely distributed micro-task workforce. There's lots of folks who are making either incomes or supplementing their incomes by doing small little tasks on the internet. Amazon's Mechanical Turk has been one of those situations where they're trying to give people a chance to do little things for small amounts of money, but they add up. What we've really been able to do is to tap into that type of conversation and that kind of group of folks. And we've partnered with a service outside of St. Louis here in the States that helps us find those people, make sure that they're qualified, make sure that they speak English. And they've allowed us to scale to the number of boyfriends and girlfriends we have rather quickly.
Now, one can go to the website, which is invisibleboyfriend.com, and find out how to sign up for it. But as you've just described, what if somebody wants to be the invisible boyfriend or girlfriend? How do they become part of your organization?
They can also go to the site and sign up. Right now, those invisible boyfriends and girlfriends, we're working through. We've gotten literally thousands of resumes of people who are interested in helping out in some way. We've also gotten a bunch of selfies. That was one of our initial challenges, is how do we have a representative set of pictures for you to choose? We didn't want it to all be stock photography. We didn't want them to all be models. We wanted that girlfriend or boyfriend that you're creating to be representative of the kind of person you'd really like to be with. And so you can go on the site. You can actually respond to us asking if you want to do some work. And we're trying to sort all that out, the same as you can also submit a selfie. The hardest part for us, and again, we're in beta, we've been around for a little over a month, is that we've got a small team. We're trying to grow the work that we're doing. And it has been, we've been overwhelmed by the public response in a positive way. The service keeps working. People really, really like it. But as we start to build out our team and expand the boyfriends and girlfriends that we're using, my expectation is that's at least a couple months down the road for us.
It sounds like a great idea on paper, and it seems like it's working out well, and it's only been a short period of time. But are you at all concerned about the possibilities of let me give you one scenario. You have a troubled person who is using the system, and then suddenly you guys have to kind of act like a suicide prevention line.
You know, that isn't an initial concern of ours. It's something that could probably, as a former lawyer, and that's my background, before I entered the entrepreneurial world the last decade or so, is that, the terms of service, we're not trying to convince you again that you're in a relationship. And so we do have some capabilities. We're looking into how we might be able to flag those if we've seen it. But quite frankly, we've not seen any of that kind of behavior yet. And I don't know that we will. It's a matter of, simple conversation. Most of it is still based around that idea of proof. So as people start to really engage with that, and if we tend to see more of that, it's certainly something we're willing to figure out how to solve for. Because I think for lots of folks, just having someone to talk to might be a dramatically, we were talking with a psychologist the other day, and the idea that just having someone to talk to who validates you, hopefully there are some mental health benefits to what we're doing, even though that's not the underlying design of the service.
Okay. Now, are the people who are using your service, Invisible Boyfriend or Invisible Girlfriend, are they telling people they're using it, or are they representing the Invisible Boyfriend as the real thing?
We don't know the answer to that 100%. We've got users from the age of 18 all the way up to 71. We have a mix of men and women. A few more women are using it than men. And we have a number of them who are even having same-sex boyfriends or girlfriends. It seems to me the use is all over the board. We've been surveying our users. We're going to be doing another round of surveys next week. So I don't know. I do know this, though, that thankfully for us, a huge number of our early users were journalists who were trying out the service specifically so they could tell others about it, which has been fantastic for us.
And again, what does the service cost?
$24.99 a month.
Okay.
Which gets you your voicemails, text messages, and handwritten notes.
Excellent. And people can go to the website, which is invisibleboyfriend.com.
Invisiblegirlfriend.com and invisibleboyfriend.com.
Matt, it seems like you struck on a great idea that is certainly an idea for the times. I thank you very, very much for being on the program. One very last question. Do you use the service, or have you found love again?
I the answer is yes to both of those. I am happily married, been married for about 4 years. My wife is a supporter of this. She loves the idea as well. But I do have an invisible girlfriend. The secret that I tell folks is I actually have her labeled invisible girlfriend on my phone. So that's text messages that come don't make my wife suspicious. She knows what it is, and it's perfectly, from my perspective, quality assurance testing more than anything else.
Well, again, great idea, Matt. Thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Matt Homan, creator of Invisible Boyfriend and Invisible Girlfriend. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is 0289, and you'll find links to both sites.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test later.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about human behavior and also binge-watching TV. Apparently, it's not that healthy. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A Saratoga Springs, New York resort has begun accepting totally defeated husbands and wives for a relaxed weekend that includes divorce, bringing to America a concept already successful in six European cities. The Gideon Putnam Resort and Spa charges $5,000 for a couple to check in on a Friday, married, but leave Sunday officially single, complete with all legal niceties and various resort amenities, including, of course, separate rooms. Even though the couple must be fairly level-headed to accept this approach, the facility manager expressed concern that since the resort also books weddings, the uncouplers might inadvertently witness difficult scenes. Gideon Putnam has hosted four divorce parties, or divorces rather, so far, but said the European founder of the package service, hundreds of couples have used the service in Europe. What I want to know is there an aisle that they can walk backwards down when they're ready to leave? You know, kind of reverse the process? That's what I want to know. And, you know, every once in a while, we like to share creatures of the animal kingdom who have a worse sex life than yours. So here's the latest edition. No organism has a tougher time than the male Southeast Asian coin spider, according to research reported by New Scientist in January. Now, it is somehow driven to mate with a female up to four times larger, who is almost as driven to eat the male as it is to mate with the male. After insemination, the male impulsively fights off other males' attempts to disrupt the conception, and that means becoming a more nimble fighter, achieved, according to a researcher from the Slovenian Academy of Arts and Sciences, by biting off its own genitals, since that organ comprises about one-tenth of the spider's body weight. Well, guys, after hearing that, you have reason to feel better about yourself, and also perhaps mildly jealous. That all depends on your headspace. And moving right along, at a February meeting in Geneva of the UN Conference on Disarmament regarding whether meetings should be open to the general public, the representative from Belarus expressed alarm because of potential problems for the security staff. What if, he asked, according to a Reuters report, there were topless ladies screaming from the public gallery throwing bottles of mayonnaise? What? Yeah. According to the official summary, the Mexican delegate apparently earnestly pointed out that some UN meetings were already open to the public, but as yet there have been no mayonnaise droppings, or I guess in this case, hurlings. Okay, now this guy from Belarus, clearly he sees food a little differently than the rest of us. And moving right along, Danielle and Alexander Matev raised their son and daughter, Rafi and Devora, to be smart and independent. Yes, this is one of these stories that I often refer to on this program that deals with the nanny state, so you know where this is going. Now, they started letting them play outside, that would be Rafi and Devora, let them play outside alone, then allowed them to walk around the block in their quiet Silver Springs, Maryland neighborhood. Eventually, that grew to walks to a nearby store and to a library, which is 3/4 of a mile away. When they thought Rafi, who by the way is 10, and Devora, who is 6, were ready, they allowed them to walk the mile-long trek home from a nearby park. They have proven they are responsible, Danielle said. They've developed their skills. Well, they didn't make it home, though. Instead, they were abducted by police officers. And the Matevs were charged with neglect. Don't you realize how dangerous the world is? Asked one of the officers who brought the kids home. The Matevs think the fear and charges are unfounded. All of this fear is misplaced. The biggest fear our society should have is that we're raising kids who don't know how to be independent, Danielle said. When do you think this independent child will emerge like a genie from a bottle? It takes time. Well, apparently, obviously, Marilyn thinks that genie appears on their 18th birthday. Apparently, it just, you know, happens. You know, I've seen the couple interviewed on television. They were even on the Today Show. The mother was on the Today Show with the two kids. Those children, in seeing them interviewed, were very, very intelligent. And I don't see what the problem is here. And I know I'm going to sound like the usual old fogey, but you know, when I was a kid, well, we went everywhere on our own and no one carted us off. I think, and part of it is the media, which I'm obviously a part of, part of it is the media scaring the bejesus out of people about how dangerous it is to grow up in an urban setting. And yes, it's dangerous, but not really so much more dangerous than it used to be. I don't know. Anyway, we have time for one more Stuff File news story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And this time we have a couple of items from the police report file that are really kind of telling. Story number one, the Knoxville, Tennessee Police Department reminded motorists via its Facebook page that all vehicles need working headlights for night driving. Included was a recent department photo of a car from a Sweetwater, Tennessee motorist who was ticketed twice the same evening with no headlights but only flashlights tied to his bumper with bungee cords. Oh, please, just impound this guy's car, okay? Just impound it. Wow. And number two, a forlorn appearing 82-year-old Annalise Young was arrested at a CVS pharmacy in Augusta, Georgia in February after store security allegedly caught her shoplifting a container of Sexiest Fantasies body spray that, according to the packaging, provides a burst of sensuality as addictive and seductive as the woman who wears it. Sure to drive any man wild. Oh, please, folks, please, just let Annalise go, okay? Leave her with her fantasies. Let her go. The woman is 82. If you have any compassion, let her go. Anyway, On to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Human behavior is complicated. In fact, it often defies logic. Lorraine Bozet-Smith is here to share some insights on the intricate psychological web that drives people's thoughts, behaviors, and actions. She's an executive coach, corporate trainer, speaker, and the author of several books, including I Want My Life Back. Lorraine joins us on the line right now via Skype to Skype communications from Houston, Texas. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Now, in looking at the little blurb that talked about some of the things you do, you can share insights on what people do in a very simple way. You're good at reading people? Is that the way it works, to a certain degree?
Well, yes. I have learned through the years to, you know, identify someone's style and then be able to adapt how I communicate with them, how I approach them, and really the magic of this is any of us can do this by just looking for simple things like pace of speech, whether it's fast or slow, some of the clothing that they're wearing, is it bright, is it subdued? And these are all clues to someone's personality.
Okay, so let's talk about speech patterns, slow versus faster. What does that say about someone?
Someone who talks very fast, they walk very fast, is going to be one of two styles. That's the fast individual or the fun individual. Really what it's saying is, I'm an outgoing person. Their energy is coming out through their voice and through their pace of walk. So you immediately know, I've got an outgoing person right here.
And you mentioned clothing as well. Now, for instance, in my other life, I am a television news anchor, so there's a certain style that has to be represented in that job, but that doesn't necessarily speak to me. So what happens when you look at someone's clothing? Their clothing might be not always dictated by their own choices, but what they have to show, in other words.
Yes, but even though your position may have said, you know, you need to wear a suit, the subtleties of what colors you would choose in that, what flair of a tie, did you go with traditional, did you go with a little brightness of color, even to the cufflinks that you might have had, will indicate a little bit about who you are. Those quiet tones, those soft pastels, typically are representing someone a little bit more reserved. They're like, hey, I don't want attention. But, you know, I see it on our local news station. He has a big, bright red tie. Now, again, he's in a suit, but his tie is giving away, and combined with his pace of speech, that he's more of an outgoing person.
Okay. So what you're talking about can work in various ways. From relationships, I would assume, to dealing with bosses, subordinates, dealing with clients, dealing with children, I would assume, it also works well, too. However, in the case of children, children are developing. They're changing as they grow. So is it easier to understand or read a child this way?
You know, we are all born out of the womb with a wiring and a bent towards a certain style. Now let's, you know, put this out there for everybody, is one of the four styles that I identify, which is fast, fun, friendly, and factual. Peter, you are all four of those. You can relate to some degree with all of that. But from birth, we tend to lean more toward one. In fact, children haven't learned how to adapt to their job, how to transition into a situation, so they're gonna be who they are. They're not putting on a pretend. So you can often very quickly see that child who's very analytical. They sit very quietly and play, and they're putting their little Legos together versus the child who's ramming the truck into the wall going, brum, brum, because they need to get their words out. Even if they don't have words yet, they have energy. You can immediately start to adapt not only, you know, discipline, but encouragement based on who that child is, because, again, we are all made different.
Now, that's interesting that you say that, because you say it's the way we're wired from birth. And this brings up the question of nurture versus nature again, because doesn't also birth order affect a certain way as to how your personality is developed?
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer that, you know, your order will often really determine some of that wiring. You know, we hear about, you know, the firstborn is going to be that dominant leader, and that's that fast-paced individual who's outgoing and very task-oriented. So yes, that does play, and so does nurturing. And again, there are some schools of thought that say how you're born is how you will die, and I don't agree with that. And you know it to be a fact that we do alter and change through life. But we at home, when we're comfortable and we're not having to pretend, will often find that we have that natural place that we can trace all the way back to childhood. But through life experience, through some hardships maybe, through, you know, our own personal development, we can tap into the other parts of our personality much easier and then, you know, build those bridges, adapt as necessary in situations.
So we can tap into our own personalities. What about tapping into others? And by that I mean, if you have a boss, for instance, who yells and gets irrational, are you saying we shouldn't take that at face value, but kind of understand the personality involved and why he or she might be doing that?
When we can get this message, it changes everything. And here it is. People do not do things to us, Peter. That boss isn't screaming at you to make your life miserable. He is being who he is. And when we can extend at least some understanding, it doesn't mean, you know, we say certain behaviors are acceptable, but we can at least understand that boss that's going off the handle is probably stressed and his dominant style is being pushed to an extreme, which becomes a negative. We can at least step back enough to say it's not about me, it's about him and his stress. And we can, you know, leave the situation and say, you know what, I'm going to come back at another time because, you know, he's, you know, off the scales, stressed. So when we can see that, we can then know what we need to do to maybe make a situation a little better.
During political campaigns, you must have a lot of fun watching the debates.
Yes, you see the extremes because that's really where they're posturing themselves to set themselves apart. Absolutely. It's a riot.
And that brings up another point, because during political debates, especially the big ones in your country, in the United States, the Democratic or the Republican debates, we're talking about people who are to a certain degree polished, who have reached the point where they are running for such a high office, but also they have a lot of handlers. So are we really getting the real person? Someone like yourself, who is very astute in watching this kind of thing, can you still see the real person there?
Yes. You know, I've had people that I've coached and trained on this and, you know, go, you know what, this feels manipulative, right? If I'm going to adapt to Peter and I'm going to change who I am, isn't that lying to Peter? And I choose to say absolutely not. What I want to do, Peter, is I want you to feel like we had a good connection. I want you to get my message. And if you speak Russian and I don't, I can't get that message through no matter how hard I scream. So what I see politicians working on, the good ones, of course, right? They're learning, how do I make sure you hear my message? And their message is who they are. Their message is what they stand for. But if I'm speaking it in a language you don't get, you'll never hear it. So it's not manipulative, but allowing that bridge to be built of a style so that you can hear it. And then that person can decide, is this a message that I agree with or not? But at least the language didn't get in the way.
Interesting indeed. Now, I mentioned in the introduction, you know, you've written several books, including I Want My Life Back. That title, I think, says it all. But can you describe a little bit in the minute we have or so about that book?
Yes, I've had many a client go, what the heck happened? How did I get here? And of course, it's from my own experience, tying into time management, relationship management. I mean, you know, we're just overwhelmed. And so it's, how do you get 30 minutes back of your day so that you can do something for yourself? So the book helps with relationship vampires, that life management, and then really just some skills and tools for, you know, what to do with all that stress that comes our way so that we can take that deep breath back and get more of the joy that we seek in life.
Relationship vampires. I love that term.
We all have them, don't we?
Yes, we do. The book is I Want My Life Back. People can find out more information by, I understand, going to your website, which is thetotalyou.biz. Is that correct?
That's correct. Lots of other books, resources, and of course, I can bring my programs to any organization or club.
Excellent. Lorraine, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Thanks, Peter. Just joy.
Lorraine Bozet-Smith, author of I Want My Life Back. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0289, and you'll find the links to Lorraine's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Over the years, we've heard about some pretty bizarre lawsuits, like the blind man who was sued after he accidentally stepped on someone's foot while walking through a mall. But we've never heard about a person suing himself or herself. That is, until now. A woman in Utah is suing herself in a wrongful death lawsuit. She admits to flipping her car while driving it and causing her husband to be thrown from the vehicle. He died of his injuries, so she's suing herself for reckless driving. If you think that's bizarre, there's more. Even though the case was dismissed by a trial court, the Utah Court of Appeals has reversed that decision and is actually allowing the case to proceed. Let's be fair. How can someone be both the plaintiff and defendant in a lawsuit? It's unprecedented, and unless the Utah Supreme Court overturns the case, that state will be the first to allow its citizens to sue themselves. Folks, we couldn't make this stuff up if we tried. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about binge-watching TV. Plus, we'll also have an idiot of the day coming your way. But right now, we have a few more Stuff File stories to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. 63-year-old H. Wayne DeWitt was charged with drunk driving and hit and run after an injury crash in Goose Creek, South Carolina. He was pulled over by local police after a short chase of over 100 miles per hour and identified as the driver in the crash. The arrest happened to come at the start of the third annual Sober or Slammer anti-drunk driving campaign run by Berkeley County Sheriff H. Wayne DeWitt. Sure enough, Sheriff DeWitt, who was just re-elected last fall, was driving a county vehicle at the time. His arrest by state troopers may have been illegal, according to state law. Only a coroner has the power to arrest a county sheriff. When the judge was setting DeWitt's bail, which is just short of $11,000, he asked the sheriff's attorney if he would like to make a motion regarding his client's arrest. The attorney said he would address that at a later hearing. Because he refused to do a breath test, the sheriff's driver's license was automatically suspended, and he faces up to a year in his own jail. DeWitt has refused to resign, but he turned over day-to-day operations to the sheriff's office, chief deputy. Yeah, okay, so only the coroner can arrest a county sheriff. Well, there is one thing the coroner can uniquely do, because he or she is qualified to do that, and that is declare DeWitt's career dead. Meanwhile, Oregon authorities have released a video of a man who claimed to have been assaulted by detectives. The video showed him punching himself in the face in his jail cell. The Lane County Sheriff's Office said 33-year-old Alexander Robin Tomaszewski claimed to have been physically assaulted by detectives January 9th while being questioned on charges that included stalking and first-degree sexual abuse. But deputies reviewed security tapes from the jail and saw him repeatedly punch himself in the face to give himself black eyes. Sergeant Carrie Carver, a sheriff's office spokesperson, said Tomaszewski appeared to strike himself in the face 45 times in the four-minute video. He pleaded guilty to attempted coercion and filing a false report in connection with the incident. He was sentenced to 20 days in jail for each charge on February 10th, but was released with credit for time served. He was also sentenced to 3 years of probation in order to pay $600 in fines. You know, he got dangerously close to becoming the idiot of the day, but he's not. That comes later in the program. In the meantime, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Is binge-watching TV a telltale sign of depression? A new study suggests that. Well, we're putting the question to Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power? An in-depth study of the professional woman in a relationship. She joins us on the line right now from New Jersey. Hi, Dr. Frieda.
Hi, nice to speak to you. And, you know, it's really a modern-day depression that's going on here. We're so hooked up to all these gadgets, and then television's just another convenience, and it's addictive. You watch something, you keep watching. I was watching the Oscars the other day, and I couldn't stop, and my kids needed to be put to sleep, so even I do this.
But television nowadays is gearing itself toward the event of binge watching. For instance, coming up in a few days, the third season of Kevin Spacey's show, House of Cards, is being released on Netflix. And again, binge watching will ensue. The same thing when the next season of Orange is the New Black is out. And everybody seems to like the idea of, oh, let's all get together, or let's all get together independently of each other and watch this thing and then discuss it later. So it doesn't have to be a depressing thing, does it?
Well, you know, too much of anything, even a good thing, is too much. And if you're taking that time away from yourself and your own activities, it does leave you empty at the end of the day. So, you know, they say more than 2 to 6 episodes is binge watching. You have to be able to set a pace for yourself, to know that you have to use your energy. And unless you're sick and you have to be bedridden or you can't get up, that's something else. But, you know, the body processes energy throughout the day. And if you don't use it, that energy, that assertiveness is pushed inside you. And that creates depression, as well as watching too much creates obesity and illnesses.
Now, I understand that the study that we're referring to, two doctoral students at the University of Texas, Austin, looked at what binge watching says about us. They surveyed over 300 young adults and found that 75% binged watch. Now, first of all, is that a large enough example to do a study like this? And secondly, that's also the generation that likes to play video games, which, to me, you can spend a lot more time in front of a video game than you can binge-watching.
Well, that's the point. The point is we're so disconnected, and I'm talking about the younger generation, from what's going on around us, that the sense of control with gadgets or watching television takes away the emphasis on controlling life away from it. So it is a problem. And, you know, what do we do about this? Where do we go? Well, we need to know that when you have an addiction, there is a period of withdrawal. And once you go through that withdrawal, then you can process life in a different way. But you do have to go through that. If you're used to it and your body's used to just relaxing for a certain amount of time, you look forward to it. So you have to exchange that to looking forward to something else. I mean, today we're freezing and we're here in the north and we're isolating ourselves from the colds because we're trying to protect ourselves. Really the opposite. You need to use the energy. You need to get outdoors. You need to experience everything around you. And so there's a comfort level. It's something that we look forward to, not having to be responsible. But like anything else, too much is too much. And you're right, we live in this generation, this time, where we're into gadgets. And I just told someone about my 14-year-old son who said to me he has 150 friends. And I said to him, where are they? And he looked at me in a daze and said, what do you mean, where are they? They're on the internet here. I do gaming with them, video games. That's the way they connect to each other through this virtual reality. And now we're talking about television and being obsessive about it. And anything obsessive really sublimates for other feelings when you're out of control. And so we need to take back control in our lives. So if you're binge watching for one time because there's something you really want to see, that's different than getting into this mode of just being a couch potato, where they do say that if you sit longer than an hour, it's very unhealthy. Even if you have a desk job, you should stand up and do your work.
Well, I'm talking to you standing up right now, so there we go.
Well, you're better off than me. I better stand up, too. I'm lecturing to you, and I'm not even doing the right thing.
But as you were just mentioning, you know, again, I see these stories about the dangers of binge-watching, and I kind of roll my eyes just a bit only because, again, talking about that younger generation that the study is based on, thinking of the things that are a danger to themselves, there's the binge watching, as we mentioned. There's the playing video games, but I'm willing to bet that if you pulled somebody away from the television set or pulled somebody away from the video games, that they wouldn't be in any dire situation. But take away their phones, because I mean, if you see people walking down the street, they're not even looking where they're going anymore. They're so glued to that particular screen. That to me is the most frightening thing.
Well, they should have insurance, walking insurance, while texting. I mean, you know, some of the accidents. They say you can't drive and text. What about walking? What about just not connecting to the world around you? You're texting and not seeing who's smiling and who you almost walked into, and the stores are going into a store and saying hello to people. We don't have that. I took my children to a movie, and the movie was sold out. So I went next door. I mean, I had ice cream at home. I just wanted them to enjoy it. And the same thing happened, texting, and they had no connection with anybody around them. And this is something that I talk about, but something that everyone is experiencing. And there should be, not a bad idea, you know, no cigarette smoking, and right underneath that, and no texting. You walk in the supermarket, this lady almost ran into me with the shopping cart, and it's also, you know, it pollutes the air to me because they're talking loud on top of you, it's disrespectful, and it's almost as if what they have to say is more important than anything else around them.
Okay, so binge-watching, video games, small screens. You mentioned earlier your 14-year-old son, and that's the way he and his age group communicate with each other. If this type of communication continues, if this is the only kind of communication, virtual communication, what problems do you foresee down the road if this continues as it does?
We're going to have trouble reading people. We'll have trouble understanding the cues in life of how to be effective. You know, sometimes just eye contact can give you a feeling about another person. And we don't have that opportunity anymore. We don't have the ability to say, you know what, the way that person spoke to me, or this person did something nice, there's no openness for learning, because when you're closed off into your own little world, you really don't have the opportunity to be more global, to be more available to other people, and to most of all, make changes for yourself, because the changes are limited if you're just being too specific with what it is that you're doing.
But I can still watch House of Cards, right?
You can watch it, and you can even enjoy it.
Okay.
But here's the deal. You know, how much of it are you going to remember later on? So if you need to unwind, nothing wrong with it. But you have to give yourself a time and say, you know what, I would like to do this as well. I'd like to call up a friend. I'd like to exercise, take a walk. Because, you know, and I speak for so many people, when I get up in the morning, if I go to my computer first, it's dangerous because I'm sucked in that. My emails, there's so much stuff flashing out at me that is just enticing to look at, that I don't have time for my exercise, and all that time I'm spending, I could be doing other things that could really make a difference.
Dr. Frieda, thank you very much for being on the program with us. We should mention your book again. It's What Price Power, an in-depth study of the professional woman in a relationship. Also, people can check out your website, docfrieda.com, correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, author of What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. You can check out her website at drfrieda.com. And, of course, you'll find a link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police arrested a man suspected of robbing a bank in New Jersey after they say he stopped for a cup of coffee a block away. Police say a man wearing a fedora approached a teller at the Hudson City Savings Bank in Lodi, placed a BB gun on the counter, and demanded money. The man fled with $4,000. Maywood Police Chief David Pegg said an officer spotted a man matching the description of the suspect near the entrance of a Dunkin' Donuts drinking coffee. Pegg says after talking to 38-year-old Michael Cassano, officers discovered the gun and the cash. The Oakland Gardens, New York resident is charged with robbery and two weapons offenses. Now, why, oh why, after robbing a bank and having the cops looking for you, would you stop for a cup of coffee a block away at a donut shop, no less, to take a break from your crime? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0289. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0289. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, I always screw it up.